urine, the grand theme of things. The Logbook.com soundtrack mixtape podcast is back with more selections, all centered around a single theme, a setting, similar plots, maybe something else, all from the realm of the fantastic and the futuristic. Something connects all the music you'll be hearing today. I'm Earl Green. Sit back and relax and enjoy a little bit of free association with music from movies, TV, and games. It's all in the grand theme of things. Paul grinned. Of all his father's men, he liked Gurney Halleck best, knew the man's moods and deviltry, his humors, and thought of him more as a friend than as a hired sword. Halleck swung the balisade off his shoulder and began tuning it. "If you won't talk, you won't," he said. Paul stood, advanced across the room, calling out, "Well, Gurney, do we come prepared for music when it's fighting time?" "So..." "It's sass for our elders today," Halleck said. He tried a chord on the instrument and nodded. "Where's Duncan Idaho?" Paul asked. "Isn't he supposed to be teaching me weaponry?" "Duncan's gone to lead the second wave onto Arrakis," Halleck said. "All you have left is poor Gurney, who's fresh out of fight and spoiling for music." He struck another chord, listened to it, smiled. "And it was decided in council that you being such a poor fighter, we'd best teach you the music trade, so as you won't waste your life and tire." "Maybe you'd better sing me a lay then," Paul said. "I want to be sure how not to do it." Welcome back to In the Grand Theme of Things. Our theme this month, in case you hadn't guessed, is tunes from Dune, namely Frank Herbert's Dune. The Hugo-winning novel has inspired more song than it has film. Not for lack of trying, though. And in fact, that's kind of a meta theme of this installment of In the Grand Theme of Things. We're going to kick things off with selections from Kurt Stenzel's soundtrack from Hodorowski's Dune. The movie Hodorowski's Dune is about the famous impressionist director Alejandro Hodorowski, who acquired the rights to create a film version of Dune in the late 60s and early 70s, and he proceeded to amass several big names, several people who would become big names in the field of science fiction, including Mobius, H.R. Giger, Dan O'Bannon, quite a few others, many of them who would later go on to work on Ridley Scott's Alien in 1979. Many of them first crossed paths during the seemingly endless pre-production phase for Hodorowski's film adaptation of Dune. The film Hodorowski's Dune interviews Hodorowski extensively, as well as many of his would-be cohorts, and discusses such wild extravagances as hiring Salvador Dali to play Baron Harkonnen, if you can imagine that, and hiring Mick Jagger to play Fade Rautha, which is kind of interesting. Somebody somewhere on high decreed that that character was rock star material, because we did not get Mick Jagger, but we did get Sting eventually when David Lynch's version of Dune finally hit the big screen in 1984. The music again is by Kurt Stenzel. This was Stenzel's first soundtrack. Now, he's better known as a punk rocker, member of the band Six and Violence, and he's a founder of the space-themed multimedia stage experience called Spacecraft. It's craft with a K. Now, interesting fact to note, after completing his score for Hodorowski's Dune, Kurt Stenzel had a stroke, but fans who had just heard his work for the first time associated with this movie pitched in via Indiegogo to help him pay his medical bills. That's some kind of wonderful right there. Hodorowski's Dune soundtrack was issued both as a fantastic double LP, which I gotta tell you, I wouldn't kick anyone out of bed for buying that for me. It was also available in downloadable form, and the interesting thing about Hodorowski's Dune is he goes on, you know, Hodorowski talks extensively in the movie about how he was going to get Pink Floyd and other prog rock giants of the era to score the movie for him. That was how he envisioned the sound. Repeatedly in the course of this documentary, the mantra is brought up that Hodorowski wanted to create an acid trip on film that you wouldn't actually have to drop acid to experience. You know, movie tickets are expensive enough. That's not really what I'm looking for when I shell out $10 at the counter and $20 at the concession stand, you know. Really looking, I am not looking to drop acid. Thanks, Hodo. As it so happened, the producer of the documentary of Hodorowski's Dune was friends with Kurt Stenzel and brought him on board. They had both been members of the New York hardcore punk scene earlier in their careers. And what Stenzel brought to this film was nothing like Pink Floyd. It was more like early Tangerine Dream. And I think that's far more likely what an early 70s film of Dune would have sounded like. And so, while Stenzel is scoring a documentary about a movie that was never made, he's also essentially scoring the movie that was never made. It's a really interesting sort of meta-conceptual experiment. And it's quite an enjoyable album. And here are some highlights from Kurt Stenzel's score to Hodorowski's Dune.
Thank you.
All right, we are going to go from trippy to smooth. What I'm about to play you are excerpts from the most unlikely musical interpretation of Dune that you could possibly imagine, without it actually being a polka. And I think that's only because no one has ever done Dune a la polka. The album is from 1977, and it is simply called Dune, and it is by David Matthews, who is a well-known session jazz and R&B player and arranger in the 1970s. David Matthews was James Brown's bandleader, so we're not talking second-rate unknown material here. James Brown's bandleader in the early 70s. His arrangements have backed the music of Grover Washington Jr., George Benson, and Idris Muhammad. His Dune album was only his fourth solo LP. And I thought I'd point out, this is sourced from vinyl. This has never made it to compact disc. Good luck finding it. Well, actually, it probably won't be that hard, because it kind of falls into another category of music that just suddenly erupted in 1977. Because Side 2 is a suite of covers of movie themes and space-oriented songs focusing mainly on Star Wars. And this was one of the earliest attempts that anyone made to cash in on the Star Wars craze by doing a reinterpretation in another musical style of John Williams' Star Wars music. So Side 2 includes music from Star Wars, Silent Running, and a cover of David Bowie's Space Odyssey, sung by Googie Coppola. Now, to add to the name-dropping here, this may all sound very silly to you, it just, you know, me telling you about it, there is some serious freaking R&B jazz talent on this album. We are talking some stellar session musicians. Steve Gadd, Randy Brecker, David Sanborn, Grover Washington Jr., playing on an album that is a musical interpretation of Frank Herbert's Dune. If you can even imagine that. I say this is one of the earliest attempts to cash in on the Star Wars musical reinterpretation craze. The sessions for this record took place in June of 1977, just 1 month after Star Wars was released. It was recorded at Electric Lady Studios, and so this was almost certainly one of the first ones out the gate, probably before Mico Minardo ran away with that category with Star Wars and other galactic funk. Very minor interesting side note here. The consultant on the record was Jeffrey Mandel. He's a very well-known sci-fi fan who contributed much to the body of published material that kept Star Trek fandom alive between the end of the original series in 1969 and the debut of Star Trek the Motion Picture in 1979. Among others, you can thank Jeffrey Mandel for bringing people like Doug Drexler into the fold of Star Trek fandom and eventually into working professionally in that franchise. So, strap yourself in. This is Arrakis as you have never heard it before. Selections from David Matthews' 1977 LP, Dune. Thank you. So, there you have it. That's about as jazzy as the Harkonnen get. We are now going to move into some far more traditional musical interpretations of Frank Herbert's universe. With the music from the 1998 PC game Dune 2000, released by Electronic Arts, developed by the sadly now extinct Westwood Studios. I loved Westwood Studios games, especially their real-time strategy games. I loved their RTS games from this period. And Dune 2000 is my favorite. It's my absolute favorite. I still play it today. It's kind of funny. There is a kind of a small, quiet, underground movement to keep the game updated. You know, to keep it running on Windows 7 and later machines, to upgrade it so it will display on, you know, modern widescreen displays, which is wonderful. I can still completely lose myself firing this game up. One of the best things about it is its soundtrack. The music is by Frank Klopacki. Now, Frank Klopacki first visited Arrakis in 1992 when he scored the far simpler precursor to Dune 2000, which was simply Dune 2. That was available on the PC, the Amiga, and the Sega Genesis in 1992 from Westwood Studios. And Dune 2000 is basically a 1998 update of that game with some additional units, some additions to the tech tree, the construction tree, that sort of thing. And it was based on the Command & Conquer Red Alert engine, which still looks great. Klopacki updated some of his 1992 compositions and added some new ones. It's all synthesized, but it's very obviously meant to be orchestral in nature. Now, about Frank Klopacki himself, he started playing drums at the age of 8. And he was a professional musician. Get this, he was playing gigs professionally by the time he was 11 years old. He taught himself to program music on a Tandy 1000 computer. He's been a member of such bands as Home Cookin', I Am, The Bitters, and Mo Friction. Some of his other game scores for Westwood and more recently for Petroglyph games have included Blade Runner, Lands of Lore, almost all of the Command & Conquer games to date, so I guess you can say that Frank is indeed the CNC music factory. He's also scored Star Wars Empire at War, Grey Goo, 8-Bit Armies, Universe at War, and it's kind of a funny minor footnote, he did the music for the Super Nintendo cartridge adaptation of The Lion King. He also scored roughly one-third of the sequel to Dune 2000, which was called Emperor Battle for Dune. He has released numerous really awesome solo albums. I mean, just kick-ass, shredding guitar, you know, orchestral extravaganzas. And part of his thing now is he licenses cuts from those albums to such things as UFC pay-per-view events, Ultimate Fight Night, Inside the MMA, that sort of thing. I've actually interviewed Frank on thelogbook.com. It's been a long time. It's been too long. The interview was done in 2001 and was sort of focused around the imminent release of Emperor Battle for Dune. I'll include a link to that interview with this podcast. But for right now, for your listening pleasure, one of my all-time favorite game soundtracks ever, Frank Klopacki's music from Dune 2000. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back.
Frank K. is in the house, and he's on the planet Arrakis. So maybe he's in the house on the planet Arrakis. Frank Lepaki's music from the 1998 PC game Dune 2000. It's worth noting there was a PlayStation 1 adaptation of Dune 2000, which used the same music. I actually own both versions of the game. I liked the PS2 version because I used to have this little portable, it was sort of a laptop thing that they did. This was about 5/6 of the way through the PS1's lifespan, where they had these little LCD screens that you could attach to the back of the mini PS1. And it had little speakers, and it plugged directly into the display output on the back of the PS1. And there was lots of noise about it being portable. It made the PS1 portable with the addition of a battery pack. I never found a battery pack that lasted very long at all. And one of the whole reasons I even invested in all of that mess was the idea of being able to play Dune 2000 wherever I went was really appealing to me. However, the PS1 version, the way I played it, because, you know, I build massive bases and conquer the whole freaking planet, and the PS1 version buckled and crashed under the strain of how many structures and units I was asking it to keep track of at the time. Wow. Anyway, it's time at last to step around the sandworms and get to the elephant in the room. We're talking about the soundtrack from David Lynch's 1984 film adaptation of Dune. The film rights to Dune had been handed around from director to producer to director to producer for many years, you know, having been passed up by the likes of Ridley Scott and having left the hands of perhaps over-ambitious visionaries like Alejandro Jodorowsky. And it wound up with David Lynch, who, you know, it really should not have been a bad choice for David Lynch, except that this was a case where David Lynch was trying to do a Hollywood blockbuster, and Hollywood sure as hell wasn't going to let David Lynch do a David Lynch movie. You have to keep in mind that one of his most recent things on his resume, as of 1984, or as of the production of Dune predating 1984, was Eraserhead, which was certainly not mainstream by even the most deluded stretch of the imagination. Lynch's Dune was scored by the rock band Toto. It is the only film they ever scored collectively as a band. A lot of the music was written primarily by keyboardist David Page. David's dad, Marty Page, conducted the orchestral parts of the soundtrack, conducting the Vienna Symphony Orchestra and the Vienna Volksoper Choir. Marty Page was also the orchestra conductor, this is kind of funny, for the Glenn Campbell Good Time Hour in the early 1970s. But that means his boss on that show was Glenn Campbell's musical director, Dennis McCarthy, later of Star Trek and V fame. Small world, the Hollywood film music industry. Small world. Marty Page won an Emmy for scoring episodes of Ironside in the 1970s. Brian Eno pitched in the Prophecy theme, and David Lynch himself contributed some musical ideas to the extended prologue that you only see in the much longer international cut, also known as the Alan Smithy edit, because Lynch was so hacked off at the edits done to his film that he removed his directorial credit and replaced it with Alan Smithy, which is sort of like the Directors Guild's version of Cordwainer Bird. Cordwainer Bird was an alias used by sci-fi writer Harlan Ellison on many of his TV scripts if he felt that he had been treated badly by his show's producers. And if you saw Cordwainer Bird show up instead of Harlan's credit, that was your signal that Harlan had washed his hands of the whole thing and said, screw it. Kind of the same thing with the Alan Smithy credit in the DGA. The soundtrack to David Lynch's Dune has been released twice on CD. One, the first release was contemporary with the film, of course, and it was kind of short. In 1997, there was a re-release that doubled the number of tracks, easily doubled the number of tracks. However, it had some mastering and sound quality issues. This is one of those film scores that people are clamoring for a remaster, a reissue of it, you know, with the modern standards of digital remastering that now exist that perhaps did not exist in 1997. A reissue of this is long overdue. But for right now, here are selections from Toto's soundtrack to David Lynch's Dune. The movie was by David Lynch. The music was by Toto. There have been other film interpretations of Dune since then, mostly on television. There have been other game interpretations as well. Quite a few others have played in the musical sands of Arrakis. If you like this episode, if you've enjoyed this one, drop me a line on Facebook or on Twitter. Let me know. Perhaps a follow-up is in order if I feel that there's an audience for it. Fade Routhus signaled the musicians. The slow march began, sonorous with its ancient pomp, and Fade Routhus led his troop across the arena for obeisance at the foot of his uncle's box. He caught the ceremonial key as it was thrown. The music stopped. That's all for now. In the grand theme of things, we'll return to the realms of the imagination with more movie, TV, and game music, all connected by a common theme. Just a reminder, all of the music you've heard is copyrighted by the respective composers, labels, and studios. Visit www.thelogbook.com/grandtheme for a listing of what you heard in this installment and links to purchase your own copies. Due to restrictions on file size and storage, what you've heard today was presented at a fairly low audio quality. By purchasing the commercially available CDs or downloads, you can hear it even better. I strongly encourage you to support the labels that are taking the time and expense to remaster and reissue classic soundtrack music. They're making music available to which longtime movie and TV music fans have never dreamed of having access, and I hope you'll join me in supporting them. If you'd like to support In the Grand Theme of Things and other podcasts from thelogbook.com, such as Select Game and thelogbook.com's Escape Pod Daily Mini Podcast, drop by www.thelogbook.com/grandtheme and click on the How You Can Help link. In the Grand Theme of Things is written, produced, and hosted by Earl Green.